I know you'd probably rather listen to that than to me. This is William Fink, and this is Monday, August 23rd, and this is the Chris Degenia Open Forum Program. Hello, everybody. This is an open forum, and I really don't have any material for tonight's program, as usual. So I hope there's somebody that wants to participate, because if you don't have anything to say, I'm probably going to run out real quick. If anybody wants to participate, just right-click your name and request to talk, and it'll be granted. I don't have a whole lot today. The weekend kind of burnt me out. I was I put a lot of work into getting ready for Saturday's program, only because I thought I was ready for Saturday's program until I read the paper that I had forgot about 6 months ago that I used for the basis of it, and when I read it, I realized I had to do a lot of polishing it up before I used it for a program. I thought it was pretty much done the first time I looked at it on Thursday. It's that's the way it is. That program, Errors Inspired by Who? I actually started part two of that today. I put about an hour into it anyway, and that's going to be a four or five part series. Just talking about all the major errors in the King James Bible and having that all in one place, and that might be good to have. Hello, Bruce. Hello, Kent.
Good evening, Bill.
How are you, John?
Hello, Bill.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you. Really good show you put on yesterday.
Oh, not the Sunday night one, the Saturday one, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sorry, the Saturdays.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
The Sunday night program was okay, but Esther Webster's good, but she has some problems, and it's getting a little old, but I think we have to bring the information out. That's all. It's got to be brought out. It's got to be out there once at least, right?
Yeah, it doesn't. That's a real good show, too. Nesta Webster is kind of problematic, but I guess you don't have much else to work with, really.
Well, you know, a lot of that history has been dumped in the trash.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen it anywhere else, a lot of it. You know, Nesta Webster and with such a breadth of it in one place, you know, to do the work to dig it all up again, it would be a gargantuan task. And she had a lot of the original source material, letters from historical figures right at her disposal. And
exactly.
She cites them all pretty well.
But mistakes?
Well, the overall attitude of the person writing a history, it is going to reflect in their books. That is no doubt in their narrative. The geography versus genealogy problem. I mean, I tried to do the best I could with that a couple of weeks ago on a program. That's
right.
Problem is as old as our race is. People building their affiliations and their affinities based on geography instead of on their genes.
I do it today.
We all do it. Well, we've all done it, at least. I don't think anyone here can say they have can say they haven't done it. I mean, that's the way it is. And we have to be conscious of it, and we have to watch how we build how we develop our affinities for our brothers and for strangers, and how we draw the lines, because they shouldn't be drawn on a map. That they should only be drawn on a genetic map if they're going to be drawn on a map.
Yeah, that can be a toughie.
Well, it's because of the way we're raised. It's hard to and we see how old that problem is. Just because somebody lives next door to you doesn't make him your neighbor. If we look at the Hebrew word for neighbor, it'll actually prove out that if we look at the definition, that if somebody isn't one of your flock, he can't be your neighbor. It's that simple. I have to take my glasses off so I can't see the chat. My eyes are. I must be getting old. I'm about 80 in a 49-year-old body, right?
What do you mean glasses? You mean reading glasses?
Well, I have like trifocals, but I can't read with them anymore. My nearsighted vision is rapidly deteriorating, so I can't read with the reading glass half of my glasses anymore. I have to take them off to read. And then I can't see the monitor. In fact, I can't even see the screen. No, I'm kidding.
Well, wait a minute. If your nearsightedness is going, then if you get reading glasses, that should help you.
Well, the reading glasses did help me when I got them 2 years ago. But it's time for a new prescription, right?
Oh, prescription. I just buy them at the dollar store.
Well, I'm nearsighted anyway, and now my nearsightedness is going, so I need, like, bifocals, right?
Right.
So if I put on the glasses that you buy at the dollar store, I still can't see far away, right?
Right.
7453 is the word most often rendered neighbor in the King James Bible. Now, Strong's defines it as an associate, and it's translated in various ways in the King James: brother, companion, fellow, friend, husband, lover, neighbor, depending on the context. But Strong says that it comes from a word, 7462. Now, let's see what 7462 means, which is the root word of rhea, which is 7453, translated neighbor, or associate, or companion, or fellow, or friend. 7462, the root word, is re'ah, and that's R-A apostrophe A-H, as opposed to simply R-E-A. And re'ah is a verb, and it means to tend a flock, i.e. pasture it. If somebody isn't a member of your flock, they can't be your neighbor, period. That's what the words mean. So if they come in from another flock and they move in next door to you, that doesn't make them your neighbor. And if you're a sheep and they're not, there's no way they could be your neighbor, ever. Okay, that's the end of my comments on that, unless there's any feedback. If not, I'll let Pilgrim Wants to talk. Do you see what I mean about neighbor? If somebody's not a member of your flock, they can never be your neighbor. There's no affinity. Geography doesn't mean anything.
Well, Mr. Rogers taught us that everybody's our neighbor.
Yeah, well, Mr. Rogers was probably working for the Jews that gave him that job, right?
No doubt.
How many people caught the original meaning of the word world Saturday night?
That was really something.
Yes, that was very good.
Order in the heavens, correct?
No, the age of man.
Ooh.
The original meaning of the English word world is what I define.
I also find it very encouraging because if it is age of man, I have to assume the next age is going to be considerably different than it is now. Right?
I hope so. We don't need to be in charge anymore, believe me. All we do is screw things up.
Because we got people who are expecting it to be a lot like it is now, only, you know, no Jews around. And maybe a lot better, but similar. I'm hoping it's not too similar to this right now.
On the last Monday's open forum, I addressed a guy named, that calls himself Kaimon or Kaimon. And his criticism of my work on Stormfront, which I addressed here. And I did that because, well, I don't go to Stormfront. And this is an open forum. I mean, I don't, you know, anybody could download TeamSpeak and connect to ChrisTagenia.net, right? Well, Stormfront, the theology forum, is not an open forum. It's more or less a private forum because you have to register, and then you have to request permission to join the theology section. And you actually have to request that permission from a woman named Lykia, who I happen to know is an extremely obese pagan whore. And I don't take that back. Now, and a witch too. Well, Lykia, I'm not going to Stormfront to the theology section. That's the bottom line. And basically, when you have to knock on somebody's door to get in, that's private. Well, this Kaimon, somebody, you know, passed the link to my remarks along to him, and he responded like this: I love being addressed by an online radio program instead of simple a simple reply on a forum, which we could then discuss rationally. And how could I reply on a private? Why should I have to go to a private forum? He can criticize me in a private forum, but I can't address him on a public internet program. That's hypocritical. So I posted that. I posted both my replies to Kaimon in writing on the open house section of the Christogenia forum today, where anybody can make a post. They're moderated, but anybody can post there. And the only thing I would not allow there is spam. So we'll see if Kaimon wants to reply on a truly public forum. I know that he knows about posts. He's been told by the person who told me about his criticism of it. So that might be interesting. I just thought I'd mention it because I don't have a whole lot to talk about, but I do have a few things going on.
So, Stormfront.
Yeah, well, Stormfront, yeah, you know, this is what I said in the post as part of my reply to him. I call him a hypocrite because that's basically what he set himself out as. I mean, he wants to criticize me in his forum, but I can't criticize him back in mine. That's crazy. Well, anyway, I said, he complained about not being able to defend himself on the online program, and I wrote back that you can criticize me or my work in a private venue where I can't defend myself unless I want to grovel at the altar of Don Black's disgusting pagan ass. But I can't answer you in my own public forum. Stormfront's not a public place. If you have to register for some place, that's not a public place. And then beg to join the theology section from a pagan witch. That doesn't make any sense at all.
And then behave to their liking. There's one over there now. We should start a banning pool. See how long it takes before the guy gets kicked.
Well, right. Stormfront's definitely, it's got to be compromised because you're right. You have to behave to their liking. If you and I know because I ran into them when I was there early last year. When you vociferate exactly what is white and what is not, they get very upset with you and delete your posts.
Oh, yeah. No.
And from what I've heard lately, if you really criticize the enemies of our God on Stormfront, they also get mad and delete your posts.
Oh, yeah. You can't be anti-Semitic. And you have to be very, very sweet at all times. And you have to say things they like to hear. Otherwise...
Well,
you're gone.
And you can't teach anybody the truth that way. And that's, you know, the pagans, I've said it before. I've said it on my regular programming that paganism has always been the Jews' best friend. And the Jews have always loved the pagans. And the Jews have always been very comfortable and thrived in white pagan lands. And that's because paganism is the religion of the Jews. All this Talmud is a pretense. The Torah, their grasping of Hebrew religion is all a pretense. If we were all pagans, the Jews wouldn't be Jews. If we were all pagans, the Jews would throw out their Talmuds and their Torahs tomorrow. I'm convinced of that. They wouldn't need them anymore. They wouldn't need the pretense any longer. I know they'd throw out the Torahs. They'd probably throw out their Talmuds too.
Well, yeah, what enemies would they have?
No,
they've got nothing to fight against at that point.
Well, right, we'd be just like an orchard of apples ready for the serpent to pick without Christianity.
Well, paganism is probably what all of those, you know, is basically it's a reflection of what all of those mud creatures carried on and did. And it was a...
Well, it's Paul states in Colossians 2, it's the worshiping of the fallen angels, and that's the ancestors of the Jews. That's their real God, right?
Right.
So, Don Black, David Duke, all the rest of these morons, they just play into the hands of the Jews. If you're not a Christian, and if you're not Christian identity, and if you're not two-seed line, you're on the wrong track and you're doing no service to the white race, period. There's no service you can do for us.
Amen. Well, it's just as well that forum over there is hidden because it gets very little traffic. Most of what is said in there is way off the mark, and it is really a blessing, I'm sure, from Yahweh that it is hidden, low traffic, and not that many people see it.
Is it that low? No, I don't know. It's been about 16 months since I've really been there. But I don't care. It's
well,
I know that it's pretty well marginalized
numbers, but I go through there to read posts and things, and the activity is very low, extremely low. There, maybe they have a lot of people reading, but it doesn't look like it by the numbers by each thread, you know.
Well, Stormfront is it's just another pen for the sheep that the Jews set up to mislead those who might find the truth. That's what I believe. And all the people that most of the two sea lion people that were on Stormfront have been banned from there. I'm probably the exception of notable two sea lion people who haven't been banned from Stormfront.
Yeah, probably 99% have been banned, and anyone who hasn't won't post there anymore in theology. And I think the forum as a whole is exactly that. It gathers them up, lets them complain and discuss, but keeps anything of any real substance away from them. They watch the links in the posts, they watch the signatures, and if you're linking to anything they don't like, it's gone. If you're discussing anything they don't like, it's gone. It is so centered, it's a waste of time.
Well, it probably is, but that's my rant about Stormfront anyway. Let everybody know exactly what I think about that.
Anyway, just a quick note on the glasses thing. I'll give you a hint. Go out and buy yourself some cheap magnifying readers, maybe 3 or 2.5 magnification, and just set them on your nose in front of your regular glasses. Forget about bifocals or any of that kind of stuff. They're kind of inadequate. It's the best way to see your computer screen. I've done it for years.
Yeah, you know, I've been told I have a big nose, but I don't know if I want to wear 2 pairs of glasses all day.
Yeah, you get used to it real quick. Oh, I just use it for the computer. But it works real well, and it's real cheap, and it's real easy.
Okay, Clifton's here. Maybe I get Clifton to say something. I don't know. Let me. I don't know if he has his Clifton, do you have a pair of headphones? Do you have your headphones on?
Yeah.
Hello. I just thought you might want to say hello. It's been a few weeks since you spoke on this program, and I saw you hiding out here.
Well, I don't have a lot to say. I just kind of resting up here tonight.
Okay. I proofread your parts 4 and 5 of the Wyatt series on Sunday, but I want to read them one more time before I send them back to you.
How'd you like them?
They're good. I mean, you're picking his arguments apart one step at a time, like you always do, right? It needs to be done. Somebody's got to do it. The whole wagon wheel, chariot wheel, 8-spoke chariot wheel, that whole story stinks right from the get-go.
Yeah, he goes to Egypt, finds out some Mameluke expert about what it was like in Egypt at the time of the Exodus. What they are, there's a bunch of Mamelukes in Egypt now.
Well, right. They're all Arabs, and I use that term Arab in a sense of being mixed races, that they're Arabs and Dravidians and Mongols and Jews and everything else that you could possibly throw into a pot, into a genetic cesspool.
And
they have no care. And they have no care for their heritage, except that the last 100 years they realized they could make a lot of money off it.
I think the Mamluks are Turks. And they some Egyptian pharaohs, of course, a long time after the Exodus, you know, up in New Testament time, they hired these as bodyguards. It wasn't long to the old pharaohs that the Mamluks took. Don't understand that stuff that's happened since.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you put in Google, all right, you put Egyptian chariots in Google and then click on images at the top, at the upper left, you will see all these pictures of these Egyptian chariots from early dynasties, and they all have only 6 spokes. Some of them only have 4. Every one of them only has 6 spokes.
Yeah, the way I understand it is spoke chariot didn't show up until the Assyrians about 400 after Solomon.
Well, every chariot I've seen here on the first 2-3 pages only has 6 spokes. And they're all from that period. I mean, you can tell from the way they're dressed that they're from the before the 13th century B.C. And they even have an entire chariot here, an actual funerary chariot. And the one that you were talking about, that king that was in King Tut's tomb, and that only has 6 spokes.
Yeah, King Tut was about 100 years after the Exodus.
Exactly. And what I'm talking about, in case anybody's wondering, is that Ron Wyatt's supporters insist that Ron Wyatt's eight-spoked chariot wheel that he supposedly found is proof of the Exodus, because that chariot wheel only existed in 18th Dynasty Egypt. And the whole thing is just a fabricated lie, because we have plenty of examples of chariot wheels from that period in Egyptian history, and they all have six spokes. It's a real nice-sounding story when you hear it coming out of the mouth of Jonathan Gray, but we can't be caught up in these lies. It's crazy. And it's a very easy way for us to get discredited when we start hawking these lies, obvious lies, obvious mistruths or untruths or however you want to put it, that these things have to be investigated. And it's way too well, we don't need to throw out our whole message because we've embraced a liar. I'm sorry, I can't do it.
Well, I don't think I would address Ron Wyatt at all. It wasn't creeping identity.
Well, right. Of course, you wouldn't address Ron Wyatt at all. I wouldn't care if he fell off a cliff. The only eight-spoke chariot here is a Roman chariot. long after the Egyptian period, right? That's on page 13 of Google Images. I don't know. I wish Eli would reconsider the whole Ron Wyatt thing. I really do. I think it's unfortunate and unnecessarily divisive. And we don't need it to prove the identity story. Well, we don't need Ron Wyatt to reach people. We don't need any of that. It doesn't advance our cause one whit. So I thought I'd mention it.
I finished up another paper today on got a number 6 on that.
I have number 6 here to proofread. You already sent me number 6 to proofread.
Number 6? Maybe
maybe it's number 7. Maybe you better go back and check your titles. Hello, Martin.
Hey, good evening.
Ken, anything more? I don't want to cut you off. I'm sorry. I don't want to squeeze you out. No? I take it it's a no. Maybe you're distracted.
Did you say something to me?
I said anything more. I didn't want to cut you off.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm just listening. I'll bow it off. Go ahead, please.
Actually, I had a quick question that Clifton might be able to answer. In the Swift letters, he makes constant reference to the old Big Book, and I was wondering if he or anyone else might have any idea what that old book, old Big Book that he was referring to might have been.
Wesley Swift, you say?
Correct.
I've got a lot of tapes, his, but I don't remember him talking about an old Big Book.
If you go to the Swift website, there is mention of, and I think some excerpts from, that old Big Book. In the Ella Rose Mass materials.
But it never really, or at least I haven't seen, where it states what that old Big Book actually is.
You'd have to look through her materials and see where she references it. I know she mentions it, and I think she may even have some excerpts from it reprinted. You might do a search called Old Big Book and see what comes up.
You mean just like a Google search?
No, a search on the Swift website.
Okay.
There's a search box, I think, in the upper right corner. And you can type in the Old Big Book and see what it comes up with.
Well, what else is going on? Something has to be going on in the world. I got a New York Times article this morning. I posted it in the Christigenia Forum. 150-something women were raped over one weekend in the Congo by a roving band of berserk Negroes. So the United States is going to send the Congo $17 million to combat sexual violence. So the people that are really getting raped, of course, are the American taxpayers. It's just incredible.
That's like the reparations they're giving to black farmers that I read about, right? Well,
why are they calling those blacks berserk?
Well, he seems to be running amok trying to find every, pardon me, nigger on the planet he can give money to.
Were those 150 savages that were raped?
I wonder why they're calling them berserk. I mean, doesn't that kind of thing go on all the time anyway? I mean, is this so terribly rare? So, who are they giving the money to? Oh, so they can combat... Oh, geez. And what are they going to do with the money? That's right. And buy some slave girls. Yes, they will. Via Tel Aviv, yes.
Yeah, and if they do complain, they're ostracized and pressed.
I think Eli likes to hang on to Ron Wyatt because he heard about it later than some of the rest of us. So he figures it was suppressed. Oh, is that what he is? Okay. Oh, yeah. Anyway, that was my impression, the way he talked, because I heard about him. Because he usually hears about a lot of stuff, too, but somehow he missed this one. And then when he finally got it, found out that the story wasn't exactly new. He was kind of gung-ho about it because of that. Exactly.
Maybe everybody left it lay there because it was so absurd nobody would take it seriously. Like Hillary Clinton giving birth to a two-headed alien baby. As easy as that might be to believe when you see it in the tabloid headlines, you know it's probably not true, don't you? They had a head removal in a jar somewhere hooked up to wires and talking in a laboratory. Isn't there some of that in Hillary's closet?
Daughter looks kind of Jewish.
Oh, her mother used to...
Chelsea.
Hillary's grandmother spoke Yiddish.
Of course
It takes a village idiot to discover that.
Yeah, the Jew thing gets way out of hand. That's one thing I think Linder did right. He did put a rule in over there at VNNF that if you accuse someone of being a Jew, you better have proof or you're going to get banned, because he got sick of everybody calling everybody a Jew all the time.
Well, she sure the hell is a Jew lover.
I didn't think she really was. I thought she was pretty smart, actually. At least, yeah, I haven't seen any. Just a spoiled brat liberal. I would say she's just a spoiled brat liberal from suburban Chicago. Is Bob a math teacher? Oh.
Well, I say even if Hillary isn't a Jew, she's twice the children of hell they are anyways, because she loves them.
So if, if you become twice the child of hell, are you part of that group then?
She has the dishonest, crafty, manipulative personality of a Jew. So there may be some genetics in play, you know, from her woodpile somewhere. No, but they excel at it. They're particularly good at it.
So I see Son of the Mist says twice son of hell equals dead. Dead, but you figure they're not dead, Bill, but outside of the city. Right. I wonder if that's everybody else or most everybody else. Well, if you are forgiven, then why are you outside of the city? I wonder if those people out there... Yeah, it does. Well, that doesn't sound like a good place. It might be worse than dying. Yeah, but forever, does the punishment fit the crime? How did she get to be your senator over there? Oh. Oh. Yeah. That is so weird, New York having so many people. It seems to me they could conjure up Democrat under every rock. Yeah, I guess so. No, that's a bunch of hicks up there. Burrows. Yeah. Well, I'd say she played her best card right there, and that's all she's got. She would have screamed it. Yeah, she is. Such a sad thing. Her real grandfather is a miserable Gentile. Yeah. No, she would have used that. I don't know.
Yeah, I would like to mention the where Paul was describing about how that we have the mind of Christ, and that the world is at enmity with Yahweh, and that love is kind of like a hypnotic type of what do you call it? It's like a mind-numbing type of love, you know, the love of the world.
Hey, Pilgrim, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
So who, I think I might have asked you this question before, but who was Ella Rose Mast again? She had collected the different archives.
Okay, there is a little autobiography there, but she somehow became affiliated with the Wesley Swift ministry. I don't know. I think it was while he was still alive. She got into corresponding with Lorraine Swift, I think after his death, but I'm not sure. Lorraine Swift sent her tapes, and she transcribed his sermons into hard copy, which all of those sermons you see everywhere, that's her work, transcribing. Lorraine Swift also sent her books from his library to read and return, and she wrote up, like, book reports or copied sections of the book, and she had a little group of people that she communicated with, a sort of a little Bible study, and she sent out a monthly newsletter to them and included some of these, you know, book reports and things. So there is a huge amount of stuff there that she wrote based on Wesley Swift's teachings or taken from his library that is interesting, sort of adjunct material to the Wesley Swift sermons.
So Swift was still alive when the transcription was going on then?
You know, I don't really recall. I don't know.
So we might...
That would be nice.
Her stuff is a very interesting expansion on or not clarification of, but it gives you a little more detail on some of the things he references or talks about in his sermons. He wasn't really good about, you know, all of his stuff was spoken. He didn't write, and he didn't really give you references to or bibliographies or things like that, you know, where you could check up his sources.
Yeah, we were saying that the other night. He wasn't too big on citations.
Right.
Like, yeah, a lot of stuff that you look into has veracity to it. If you need some is better than others, though. It looks like he's requesting talk power right now.
Like he references the Book of the Bee. That's available at one of those sites. I just recently put that up over at New Ensign. So some of the stuff he references you can't find on the Internet.
Yeah, actually, I'd seen that once a while back, but I'd never really heard of it before.
I just finished putting up the Book of the Cave of Treasures. That one was kind of a booger.
Who's the authorship accredited to?
Who knows?
That one was Wallace Budge.
So, Miracle, can you shed any light on the Ella Rose Mast?
On Mast? I found out about her through Lorraine Swift, and she recommended I get a hold of her because she was tidying up Dr. Swift's sermons. So I did, and she would send me in batches of 3.5 floppy disks of it all. And when it originally came, I think she thought that if she put it in 8-point and real tiny letters that it would take up less space on the disk, which... which it didn't do, you know, but it was, So I spent a lot of time taking that stuff out. It's fairly accurate in a lot of areas. You'd have to almost listen to the audio and then and read the sermon at the same time, which is not so bad because you can stop and reread something. But she had, I was looking in here because the biography that you have on the site there came from Ella Mast herself. She sent it to me. Here it is, Mast. She sent it to me, and see if I can find it. Yeah, I don't know what the name of the file is, so I'll just search for it.
Was Swift alive at the time of her doing the transcripts?
No, I don't think so. See if I can find it here. I know that I sent a copy to Bill and that's not it. well, it's on the site there for her biography, but she would send me, I got some letters here that back and forth from her, but she was very energetic. I mean, she devoted her life to this. She was just, I guess, very elderly, so I guess somehow or another she was able to do it financially or just suffered the penalty of it, you know, but she worked on it so much that she was in a nursing home, and she was still writing. And she was still putting together newsletters, still transcribing the tapes. And I suppose she had a tough way to do it, the old-fashioned way. You know, you had a little desktop tape player, and you just played a little bit and type. But she worked up to the day she died on various Israelite things that she had put together. And she had quite a lot of, I think I sent to Bill almost all the discs that I have. I mean, copies, and I think, I don't know how. Bill, do you remember how I sent it to you? Were they on floppy disks? I may have. I don't remember now. But there was, Well, that's how I got them. And then I set them out up to, so what Pilgrim got probably came somewhat from what she got ultimately from me, which came directly from Ella Mast.
Did you transcribe Mast's work when she wrote it in the lowercase letters?
No, anything that was there was the way she had it.
Original. Okay.
One of the problems is by listening to the tape and then or listening to the audio sermon and reading it, is you'll find that a lot of people, for example, with Snyder, with Comperé, Jean Snyder, I think it was, she would change, when Comperé would say God, she would put Yahweh in there. And that's not necessarily a good idea. If you're going to transcribe it, leave it exactly as it is. But I don't know if Mast changed anything or not. I don't think she did. But some people have a habit of, they want to say, oh, surely he meant Yahweh. Well, maybe he didn't, you know. And depending on the audience he's talking to, maybe he didn't either. I didn't do any transcribing. Everything that I got was from her. And
how did you come across her?
Lorraine Swift had recommended that I talk first with Clifton Emmaheiser. And I got on his Watchman's teaching letter for I think I was, the next one I got from him was number 6. And then I asked for the rest of them, the first ones. And it's been on it ever since. And he had a, at the time with him, it was the same thing with Ella Mast. She would send out newsletters too. And they just print it out and then get photocopies and send them by snail mail. That's the old fashioned way, you know. And that's how Mast would send me some of her newsletters, and I probably have several in here. I don't know if they're on the website for Swift or not, or if they made a Mast Swift. I didn't look.
But, so you found about Mast through Clifton?
No, Mast came from Lorraine Swift.
Oh, okay.
And then I've been communicating with her. I got the floppy disk that she made of his sermons. There's a lot of them, too. I don't know how many, but there's a lot of them. Yeah, probably so, yeah. And I think she got them off cassettes that Lorraine Swift used to make and send out to people whenever they make an inquiry or maybe had a regular tape ministry. She would send those out. And when she moved up from, she used to live in Lancaster, I think. And, I think she lived down there towards San Diego. And then she moved up to Lancaster all of the library of books that Swift had went to Hugh Greer. And Hugh Greer let him go to Kingdom Identity.
Harriman?
Yeah. And he's got, I'm fairly certain he's got all or a significant majority of the Swift library. And I'd seen that library. It's quite large. And I wanted to pick off a few books, but before I could do that, he got in here and grabbed them.
Now, from what I understand, there's no copyright on them.
On the sermons?
Yes.
Yeah, there's no copyright in the sermons, either in print or on the audio.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they spread those around. Now, the books that he had probably had copyrights.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's,
well, that's understandable.
I've seen real famous authors, and they have an anthology of all their previous early works. You know, they're thanking the publishers for giving him permission to use his own stuff because he gave up his copyright just to get published. Later on, when the guy gets famous, now he has to go back and beg to sit there and publish his own work. You know, and I guess if you're an author, if you want to get published, you got to do it.
Well, Yahweh has a copy. Yahweh has a copyright on his offspring, correct?
Well, not the way that... but there's somebody out there doing their best to kind of ruin the patent, if you want to call it, on the DNA of the white race, the miscegenation and everything like that.
What are they trying to do, Muniker?
Well, you know, there are some, like the hybrid corn and the hybrid wheat and the genetically modified foods, those all have something taken out or put in. Like some of it, they have a, some kind of a human gene put into something, some animals and some human genes into the wheat or the corn or something like that, and it changes mm-hmm. the original content. So that means that they can put a patent on that corn or that wheat. Now, Monsanto has been sending around a lot of genetically modified seeds that are patented, and they own the patent, and therefore when a farmer puts a seed out and grows up that crop, he has to do with it what Monsanto tells him to do, which is to harvest it and either give it to Monsanto or whatever, but he can't keep the seed and use it for his own purposes. But even so, if Monsanto can change the DNA, or we want to call it, or the chemical composition of the seed of the corn or the wheat, well, then they own that the patent, and therefore they own the wheat. And it's getting to the point now where all they can get is patented wheat and patented corn seed, to the point where we're not going to be able to eat unless we buy the patented seed from Monsanto. Now, if you have...
Well, we'll sell those seeds and put them up where the sun doesn't shine behind those Monsanto freaks.
Well, right now, Monsanto's got the government on their side, and the government has the cops with the guns.
The government's nothing.
But anyway, there's a... There are basically
bunch of hot air.
I think they probably already have cloned human beings. They just haven't told us. And that would be a patented item.
Yeah, I shudder to think what they're doing in their in those laboratories they're not telling us about.
Yeah, they've been doing it probably for a long time.
Oh, any race mix?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been looking through a lot of Irving's stuff. And I found a lot of interesting photographs of some of our heroes. I've been putting those up. Let me go over and see what else I've done that's so great. I kind of laid off that for a while it got in its latest state, so now it's doing pretty good. So I'll go down there to, I'll go like this. There you go, to Mein Kampf. And then I'll, go down to recent posts to see what I can remember here. Oh, a bunch of Life magazines. Oh, that's you, huh? Life magazine 31. Oh, really? Okay. I noticed the when I go over to the image library, that it's more alphabetical now.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 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 Ah, okay. Yeah, so it shuffles it. Oh, good.
Ah, pretty good.
Well, the ones I put most of the images on there were in Life Magazine Temporary 7. Later on, sometime we'll put it all together into one big one, you know. There's about 1,500 images on there now. At least that much. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. See. In the... Okay, let's see, I'll click one. Here's a... Oh, yeah. Yeah, here it is. I'm in the miscellaneous Hitler, National Socialist, Military, and SASS leaders. And I put a lot of stuff in recently. We've got Eva Braun's engagement ring from Hitler, if you want to see that. Eva Braun writes with grim news from Hitler's bunker. It was like a couple of days before it was over. Well, they show a picture of her engagement ring with a note from her to this a friend of hers. What do I have here? Yeah, maybe it's just a brass bushing or something like that. But you guys got to give her what he has, you know? Well, then look at the conditions. You know, the place is falling apart. and I don't know who the dog is. No one in the... Grim News from Hitler's Bunker 2. There's a picture of a German shepherd there, and it's in German. So I don't know how to read that, whether that's Hitler's dog Blondie or what. But there's a German shepherd in with three pups. Looks like three pups in there. And maybe this comes from David Irving's site, but maybe he'll translate it sometime and tell us what's going on. A lot of pictures about... The various leaders, I'm scrolling through here, the latest ones. Himmler, I got some on Himmler. There's some, for those that are artistic, Hitler did a lot of painting in his early years, but there's a lot of painting going around that professes to be Hitler as the painter, but it's not. And there's several Hitler, fake Hitler art articles in there that are pretty good. Yeah, it's worth lots of money. And he doesn't care. He'll make money off of it, you know. Always my classic, my favorite. Goebbels and Goering, A Contrast in Physique. And it shows Life magazine's cover. And it shows this huge Goering with his big belly, his hands on his hips. He's looking down at Goebbels, this scrawny little runt. No, clubfoot. Yeah. You have to not look at his face, which is very, it's almost like it's a mask. A really good representation. Yeah, and you.
Didn't Irving vilify him?
Goebbels? Well, he wrote an autobiography about him. That's not too much of a vilification. I haven't read it. I've got a copy of it.
Actually, I'm referring to his court case where he was vilifying most of the people he wrote about.
I'm not sure what you're speaking of. Well, if you go to his website, you find he has a particularly what he calls his action report online, and he gets into a lot of anti-Jewish stuff. I mean, he really whaps him.
So maybe he repented of how he acted in court.
I
do too, and I was kind of mad at him for that. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, they're going to put you in anyway. I haven't read his. He's got a on his website. He's got a section there that talks about his time in the prosecution in the prison. I think it's on his action report, page 2. Yeah, here it says Austria's arrest and imprisonment of historian David Irving. That might give you an idea of what his view of it anyway. But I haven't read through all of it. But there's a lot on his website, and he's not at all kind to the Jews. Well, how do you say he
was? Yeah, I do too.
I mean, like saying that he really wasn't opposed to the Holocaust and stuff like that? Or he was not a Holocaust
denier? Yeah, he was a believer then.
Well, it can be admitted that there was some Holocaust of the Jews in the Russians. I mean, with the Germans going up into the Ukraine, where they kind of did a little payback on the Jews that murdered those 30 million Ukrainian Germans, you know. They went out there and all they could bump off was a million Jews. But there were a million Jews killed, you know.
That was just crushing Satan's head, that's all.
Well, they didn't see it that way. The people.
I never heard that either.
I think that's true. We'd have to look around and find it. But there was a lot of places where they found, supposedly, these Jews were dead there. But I'm not sure exactly how he would have denied the Holocaust. It's pretty obvious that Jews have been murdered in the Second World War by the Germans just because of the wrath of it all. And because they were not in uniform. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that doesn't make a difference to the Jews. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's not murder, then?
Stalin should have sent them to uniforms. Yeah. Well, I don't know if the Soviets signed that or not.
But say that the most that could have...
Yeah.
Didn't Arthur Butz say the most that could have died was like 300 and something thousand? And that's for all causes whatsoever.
Yeah. And since Jews live in the city, they bombed the daylights out of Hamburg and Dresden. They probably killed off a bunch of Jews at the hands of the English and the Americans. Because you're not going to find Jews out there on the farm. Well, they say that 30 million Ukrainian Germans had died by starvation and things during the 30s. Even Goebbels said that in his... one of his speeches that you have online here, too, the print, I think it's the Communism with His Mask Off, I think is by Goebbels. Yeah, and he must have had some basis. Yeah.
Mennonites. And
What was that?
Really, I'm serious.
What? Who is Blanchard?
Who's Blanchard?
Larry Blanchard.
What happened to Bill G, anyway? What doesn't he like about the chat room? Oh.
Yeah, I can see where there's a lot of jibber-jabbering between people there, and it's not on point as to what's being discussed in the audio side of it, which means you have to fish through all the stuff that's irrelevant just to find one or two lines that are relevant to the conversation. So that gets to be something of a bother. Oh, wow.
Folks at the front desk, they run some kind of a shop there?
Oh.
Oh, there's a lot of houses there. And a lot of houses for sale, too.
It's just like a studio.
Oh, wow. By new, you mean?
Well, yeah.
They should put a, if it's that desperate, they should just put a low price on it and just get rid of it. If they got it paid off, just get rid of it.
All right. Now, the way I think about that kind of stuff, if everything is for sale and people can't sell their homes, then the prices of goods should drop. Isn't that a axiomatic? Yeah.
No, natural, but not the unnatural, which is basically what we've got going.
We'll keep talking about runaway inflation and all this. I can't see it. With people that can't buy stuff, how are they going to have inflation?
Well, inflation, according to the...
In the market, then there are goods.
Right.
And what causes deflation? Patricia, that's really bad.
What's bad?
The feedback I'm getting from you.
How can there be... Oh, maybe I need a headset. Come on.
A woman driver.
A headset is always a good idea here.
In the dictionary, inflation is pretty much this way since the 1760s when I held the real dictionary in my hand. And basically it says that inflation is the increase in the supply of currency, which we would call paper money or credit money, like Federal Reserve credit, followed by a rise in prices and then wages. So first you have this flood of paper money, not gold or silver, but paper money, and that and that causes the businesses to recognize that there's more money out there, so they raise, and it also dilutes the buying power of the money that existed. So if you have 100% money out there and you put 10% more, it reduced the buying power to 90 cents per dollar. So they raise up their goods by 10%, so now you have to pay $1.10 just for them to break even to get a dollar. But that means that the wages have to go up because the prices of food and everything else went up. But wages are always the last to come along. It's usually inflation is increasing the supply of money, and then the prices go up, and then wages are way behind, and they finally come up. But the thing that really causes the problem is these three parts that most economists do not understand. And over here at this university they had an economics seminar, and three of their big shot economist professors are up there talking about it. And when they got done with their little spiel, I got up and I asked them if they understand inflation. Well, they didn't really. They come up with these BS excuses. Well, it's an increase in the prices. And no, I just told them what it was. And they didn't have it right at all. And I said, the problem with economists is they don't understand the three basic causes of the problems of the economy. One is the credit creation. Two is the expansion and contraction of that credit money. And three is the mobile economy. Now, most of us all understand the credit creation. The Federal Reserve just creates credit out of nothing. And then the federal government accepts it as credit to pay off their debts. And then the Federal Reserve has the right to increase or decrease, expand or contract that amount of credit money that's in circulation, the bank credits, credit cards, checkbooks, stuff like that. And then they have the mobile economy, which means they take a bunch of their credit money and they just happen to put it over here, let's say, in the Chicago area. Oh, boy, everything's going really good. We got lots of money. They loan it out. Businesses get started and everything like that. And then slowly they trickle the money down to Atlanta. And pretty soon Chicago hasn't got much money left anymore. Businesses are going out of business because local people haven't got any of that credit money anymore because it's not there. The banks just took it back and shuffled it down to Atlanta. And Atlanta has a whole bunch of boom, while Chicago's bust. And then up to New York, and New York is booming, and this mobile economy goes up north, and now Atlanta's going bust. And it does this all the time. You can watch it going all over the country, various major regions and smaller areas, constantly moving this the supply. Oh, boy, we're doing really good. Oh, we're just terrible. And the other guys down there are doing well. That's the mobile economy. So those three parts, credit creation, the expansion and contraction, and the mobile economy are the things that are ruining everything, and that's the cause. It has nothing to do with wages, nothing to do with prices. Prices is a natural result of the increase in the supply of credit money. Wages are a necessity. So that's kind of, but I think the withdrawal of the credit supply that they had for that particular region happened first, and then people went down, and then the new credit comes back in to buy up all the stuff, you know, like 5 cents on the dollar, and then they put it back again, and these people have profited by buying businesses cheap, buying stocks and bonds real cheap, you know, and he put it up again. It's hard to tell which came. Yeah. You kind of wonder. You know, did you look and see how many miles it has, or did you just drive by it? Has it ever moved?
Well, you know, there used to be a great thing in the Maui News. Maui News paper, everybody bought their cars out of what was called the bulletin, you know, the little penny saver thing. And cars would just sit in the Maui News, the regular newspaper. And you could pick up some tremendous bargains there because nobody bought cars out of the Maui News. They all bought them out of the bulletin. So I wouldn't give it up. People probably just are thinking like you and think there's something wrong with it. A friend of mine, she sold a car for really, really cheap just to get rid of it because her husband bought her another car. She really, I don't know why she sold it so cheap. So go check it out. Be a skeptic. Go check it out.
You walk in with $1,000 in cash.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. If it works, don't fix it. Because then you have
I'd say get a van.
Maybe you could live in it.
Keeps the rain off of stuff.
Yeah. And you can, it's a second apartment. You could be a hippie.
So listen, tomorrow night, I just want to set the record straight, is not Lawrence Blanchard. Tomorrow night is our own Mac Dog. He is taking us to the movies. We're going to, and so everybody's got to bet, you know, pop some popcorn tomorrow night and get ready for the movies. MacDog's got film clips and everything ready to go. This is his maiden voyage on Crystalleos. It's going to be a great time. So I should send out a memo in the morning to remind everybody. Lawrence Blanchard is the following Tuesday, and that'll be on TalkShoe. So that should be fun. He's a naturopathic physician in addition to being an identity author. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he's 2 Seedline. Ooh. I'd like to see that. Well, the person... Well, Lawrence has written some really good books. I've only scanned a couple of them just, you know, because I'm new in the fold there. But RP highly recommended him and has all his books and said good things about him. So, and very approachable guy, very nice, easy to work with. So I'm looking forward to that. But, man, tomorrow night's what I'm really looking forward to. This is going to be so much fun with Mac Dog. It's going to be good.
These are videos?
Oh, yeah, there's YouTube clips. He's put this all together, and he's been working on this, and it should be a really good time.
So, in other words, he'll put a YouTube link, and we click on that and listen while we watch?
Yep.
On YouTube?
Yep. Well, I guess that's how he's got it set up. So,
okay.
I don't think he's giving us – you're not giving us any homework tonight, Mac Dog, are you? Okay, no, that's good. Okay. Very good. Right on. Well, that's all I wanted to say. Hey, oh, by the way, you know, they're gearing up for flu season again. They just admitted that the swine flu, you know, H1N1 epidemic was over. How many people do you know had it? Oh, gosh, it's funny. So now they're coming up with a all-purpose flu shot, all-in-one. You know, you don't have to worry about if it's this year or last year's one or if it's the swine flu or the H1N1. They got one shot, does it all now. They're advertising it right down here at the CVS. And I got invited to...
Well, you see, the reason they're doing that is because they lost money on this last year, even in spite of Jeffrey Taubenberger's extreme goal of digging up the 1918 Spanish influenza. He actually dug up the corpse in Alaska that had died from that, and tried to recreate it in the lab, like resequenced it and stuff. I mean, oh yeah, they just put it all through trying to make it super virulent. Guess what? It didn't work, and it was pretty much a benign flu year. But I got invited to a health fair at this upscale seniors place in Henderson, and they told me Savon Pharmacy is the sponsor. I said, well, what kind of a turnout do you get? And they go, oh, we get a really good one because everyone comes to get their flu shot. So I'm like, oh, my gosh. I mean, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to go. If I go, I'm not going to be able to keep my mouth shut. I just can't. These people are absolutely incorrect. And they had, if you get a flu shot for 5 consecutive years, you're 10 times more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease. Oh, absolutely. And if they're going to have that health fair, they should at least have some ambulances standing by for all the people that go into anaphylactic shock afterwards. it's unbelievable. That whole vaccine mindset just cracks me up. Yeah, can I get it? Yeah, Jew shot. That's what it is. Exactly. Oh, they totally do. They don't trust their immune system. They've been cold and flu season. And every pandemic we've ever had has all been an injected pandemic. I mean, the 1918, Spanish flu epidemic that killed so many people and paralyzed cities and all that kind of stuff, that was all completely done by vaccines from Fort Riley, Kansas. They over-vaccinated a bunch of men, and they were all dying on their way to Europe. They couldn't very well call it the Fort Riley, Kansas vaccine screw up flu. That wouldn't do. Spanish flu had a better, ring to it. So
There was a book written on that, wasn't there?
Oh, there's several books on it, and it's just amazing. People that had any kind of pharmacological intervention died at much higher rate, like 30%, died, even if they took aspirin. But people that went to homeopathic doctors, only 3% died. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. Yeah, Alexa is completely right. Everyone weakens your immune system. Yeah, totally compromises. It confuses your immune system. And they just ruin children. So I very rarely see normal children anymore. When I do, they stand out to me. And then I go over and I talk to the parents and I say, can I ask you a personal question? Oh, no, we didn't vaccinate. We don't believe in that. And I say, yeah, I can tell they're, relaxed, confident, have self-governance initiative. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. I could tell you who the homeschoolers were in 10 minutes when I was a Sunday school teacher. 10 minutes I could tell you who they were. I thought I was seeing the effect of homeschooling. What I was really seeing was the effect of no vaccinations.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And it's the same thing with dogs. Dogs, even though they took the thimerosal 20 years ago, they took thimerosal out of animal vaccines, they still damage a dog's ability, brain damage them and affect their ability to behave and stuff. I mean, it's absolutely incredible that people still fall for that.
The problem now is that they require by law, supposedly, all these vaccinations and injections at birth. And I read somewhere where one of the injections that they gave for something or another was the amount they gave this newborn infant was the size you'd give some guy that was 220 pounds.
Oh, yeah, they don't differentiate. They don't differentiate. They give a child 12 hours old now, your brand new infant. They give them a vaccine for a sexually transmitted disease.
Yeah.
Now, I know children are sexually active earlier, but I don't think we have to worry about them in the nursery. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And, for you to give your child a flu shot safely, to give your child a flu shot safely, that amount of mercury, according to the CDC, you would have to have a really big child, like a 275-pound child. And for an adult to safely take one, you'd have to have a 550-pound adult.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just terrible. They're just so worried that we're going to wake up one of these days. They want to dumb us down and damage us as, you know. The Jews have no idea of the concept overkill. There's no such, always has been. As a matter of fact, someone asked Rockefeller why, you know, he financed the whole pharmaceutical industry with the, you know, the Flexner report that put all the competing, natural health med schools out of business. There was 650 at one time. Now there's 50. He put them all out of business. And somebody asked him when he was sick why he used, you know, homeopathy. Why don't you use your own drug? He goes, oh, that's business. This is my health.
Is there like a source or site for that somewhere? And
Flexner? Oh, you want to see the Flexner report stuff? Yeah, I had a really good site on that recently. Let me look for it. Y'all talk. Okay. I'll shut up and I'll go find that and post it.
Okay.
Hey, nice talking with y'all.
Good to see you, Mike. Yeah, when my little boy was born, the second one, I was doing my best not to get involved with the hospital. We went there anyway because the second wife was not exactly cooperative. And I don't know. Yeah, I stayed with him as much as I could. And later, my wife came in. I was in the room, and I wouldn't let the kid sleep in his little crib. I kept him right in my lap, and I just curled up in this easy chair and made sure nobody got him. But then she came along, and I don't know what happened. I was pretty tired by that time. And she probably took him off and got all the vaccinations. Or what they do is oh, could we take him for just a moment, you know, and they make it sound like they're so nice and so helpful. Maybe he got his vaccinations. I don't know. I don't know. It's hard telling. But I've tried my best not to get him to have that, but I think maybe he did anyway. That's the problem when you let these guys, these doctors, take their kid off in the room by themselves. You don't know what's going on. You got to keep an eye on them. That's where home birth is good. But you got to have a midwife that is willing to do that and to not push the vaccinations or bring them along even, you know. Has to almost be like a homeopathic a midwife. And there aren't very many. There was one book I could have got, but somebody got it before I did. There's something about homeopathic nursing. It was from the 1800s. Like 1890, 1880, something like that. But I looked at that and went back to get it when I realized what it was, and it wasn't there. Bad. But maybe it's Google Books is putting the purpose of Google Books is not to make all these ancient books available to us. They want to put this into a huge computer and have a computer decide what should be done in these circumstances, you know, artificial intelligence. But on Google Books, they have a lot of these old books, and maybe I should go look for that. I can remember the title. And see if it's there, because there's a lot of books that are online that weren't there before, because Google goes over to these major universities and just start scanning their books, the old books out of copyright, right in there. That's all right. Maybe it's so profound that they couldn't come up with anything. Let's see. Well, other than the National Socialists, there's so many I put in here. Golly, I mean, there's zillions of them. And then we also have, we've got the Olympic or Olympia. You have Olympia up there. And you have Triumph of Will. And I got a bunch of images for that. Were you going to find Victory of Faith by Reifenstahl and put that up? Or else also Baptism of Fire, a German national, I guess it was like the Weimar, what do they call them, a movie about the invasion of, I think it was like Netherlands or something like that. And they put it out to kind of frighten everybody else into saying, wow, this could happen to you type of thing. They've got that online somewhere and you can buy it. Were you going to put those two up? That's right. Okay. Well, for those that watch the Olympia movie on the Mein Kampf. Yeah. Oh, boy, it's really. Yeah. Yeah. And history will never be written properly. if we go the way we're going, they'll still make it look like a guy's a jerk and the people are idiots and puppets and stuff like that. But it's a really, Olympia is a really good, there's two parts to it. I think it's about 3 hours long by the time you get done with it. And it's really good. The first half is in German with subtitles, but you don't really need the subtitles. And the second half is in English. And that's a lot easier to understand. It's pretty, it's really interesting. Great Olympics. And you don't even get those images today, I don't think, even on the Olympics. In fact, a friend of mine and I, and, when was the last one? 2006, I guess it was. The Winter Olympics had the lowest viewership in the history of broadcasting of Olympics. People just weren't watching the Olympics anymore. Even the Summer Olympics didn't have very many people watching. It's like they don't care. Maybe they're believing all this trash they see on television and think, well, it's all white people. Well, those are the ones that have the sports, you know. I'm surprised they don't come up with something where the... Well, they got the javelin. I'm sure the Africans can throw a javelin. They see... This is how it goes. These three guys were trying to get into the Olympics. One was a Negro, one was a Mexican, one was a Polack. And they walked in the back door thinking they'd go in like they worked there and it's common help. And the guard says, where's your pass? He says, we work here. Well, you got to have a pass to get in. So they went, well, we'll get them. So they left. And they're standing around trying to figure out what to do. And the Mexican all of a sudden gets, hey, I got it. So he goes over to the trash can, the old-fashioned trash can, gets the lid up, stomps on it really flat, okay? Takes off his pants. He had a boxer shorts on. He had the little tank top like they have, you know. And he took it off, and he went out there barefoot, and he puts it under his arm, and he goes over there and says, where are you from? Mexico, discus thrower. Okay, go in, says the guard. So the Mexican went in. He watched the Olympics, you know. So the Polack and the Negro were looking at this. And then the Negro says, hey, man, I got you. He goes over to the closet there, and he pulls out a broom, whips out his switchblade knife, takes the broom bristle off there, and sharpens the front of it like that. Gets his clothes off down to his BBDs, and he doesn't even have a top. He's a typical African, you know. He goes over to this broomstick at the sharp point, carrying it on his shoulder. Where are you from, mister? He says, I'm from Africa, a javelin thrower. Okay, go in. So the guy, the African, the black guy goes in there. And the Polack is standing out there thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So he sits over this junk pile. Some 2x4s, some little fences, you know, and some barbed wire. So he picks one up, and it's all falling apart. So he just kind of pulls it apart. Wraps the barbed wire around the thing, and he goes over there and says, where are you from, mister? He says, Poland, fencing team. Another profound statement in the way he responds. you straighten your stuff up.
Okay. Oh, open file browser.
And it's where again? I'm on TeamSpeak. It's under tools. No. Well, I'm there now. I got the. Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Okay, so I click on the link there at 205252. Okay, right click on that link there. Open file browser. Confessions. Okay. Should I wait for a while? These other guys download it, or should I be selfish? Download. Okay, download, finish, 100%, okay. Now, an MK doctor means what? Okay. 12 pages. I had to click on the main forum tab and then go up a little bit. Therefore, you don't watch television, eh? I was talking to a Jew years ago. No, I was reading it in the newspaper. They had where I used to live, there were a lot of Jews. And they had a Jewish newspaper, so if I saw it, I'd pick it up and browse through it, you know. Later on, they had a magazine, and they probably had others, but I happened to see these. And in one of the articles, this lady's talking about television, and she said, and they said, practicing Jews do not watch television. It's for the goyim. That's what they said. So if that's not good enough for them, why should it be good enough for me? Yeah. Yeah, it's a hip, with the hypnotic effect that it has, constantly bombarding us, you know, with all that stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got a book in a thrift store called Tough Jews, Fathers, Sons, and Gangster Dreams by Rich Cohen, of course. And in there, there's some little photographs. And he says it's a study of the 1920s and 30s and the Jew gangsters. Bugsy Goldstein, Kid Twist, Rels, Pittsburgh Phil, Strauss, and a whole bunch of others he names in here. Lucky Luciano, Bugsy Siegel. I remember saying nobody called Bugsy Siegel Bugsy to his face. Lucky Luciano, and a whole bunch of these. He's writing about it, and he indicates in here that all the Jews like to get together and talk about the gangsters, the Jew gangsters. It was like a, it was like us. We talked about Roy Rogers and Gene Autry. Well, they talked about the gangsters, and it goes into pretty good detail here of the Jews that were we understand is Italian. And what they were up to. And it's, I guess this can be a pretty good read. A little bit dated because they're not exactly here anymore. But I think if you look at them, you can pretty much see what's going on today. No, but that was kind of, it didn't surprise me to see that the Jews in those days of the 50s, anyway, were, they just were completely enthralled with the activities of their Jewish friends, the mafia, and, Murder Incorporated, things like that.
Okay. So when I, if I went, what? There you go.
Is this, I should type her name in here, my story. What was her first name then? Blanche? Sally. Now is this Dr. Blanchard, I guess, was her husband, the doctor? Was she, is she, is he still alive? Oh, he is? Okay. I wonder why she's showing up and not him. Well, if this is her story and she's going to be appearing on the show, I wonder if, okay. Close enough.
Well, let's see.
If they want to see some of the beginnings of the stealth bomber, you know, the flying wing, in the Mein Kampf, in the image gallery, image library, under Wunderwaffe, Wonder Weapons. There's a whole bunch of images I found in a lot of different places. Shows kind of the history of the flying wing. He really got it started back in Germany with Reimer and Walter Horton, and they had some built, and they were flying around. In fact, there was one picture in 1959 where they made one out of wood, I think it was, at Mississippi State University. Blue with red, I guess that's their colors at the university. It's a glider, and it went around for hours. That's pretty interesting. And then their nuclear activities is more down towards the bottom, Nazi atomic secrets. There's seven thumbnail pages, I call them pages. And they're discussing how the Nazis almost got the atomic bomb. That's from Life magazine in 1947. There's been a lot published since then, but this is what I found in the Life magazine. That's kind of an interesting... Yeah, yeah. And your bladder. Well, although us guys, we got it pretty easy, and we can just kind of pour it out the window. Let me go down here. Connected. Okay, what else can you look at while they're waiting around here? I've been uploading. You're in the top million? And did it... Do you know how many... Does it say, like, in the top million of how many million? Like, is there... Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, interesting if you could figure out, and it's not possible, I don't think, the kind of people that are coming to the site. Like, are they our kind of people that need it, or are the people coming around trying to find out? Oh, they know that. Yeah. Hey. Well, please don't. They hit them up for the money. Well, the problem we're having lately here is especially among young people who want to communicate, you know. This is like the telephones when we were in high school, you know, the girls would get on the phone talking with the girlfriends and they're just two blocks down the street there. But this is the modern communication, so they talk for hours on the phone, you know. And now they text. They sit right next to each other. But this is a modern way of communicating, so they're having fun with modern technology. But a lot of times places like Facebook, they want you to put all your family photos online. Put everything about you online so people can know. Well, what do they want to know for? Who cares? Well, there are people out there who either steal identities or they try and come up with patterns and figure out what the latest shoes are going to be or what the latest hairstyle is. You know, they can go out there, shuffle around, and maybe get there and catch the money. But if they type all this stuff in, like from a internet provider, they may actually ask questions or they innocently answer them. Oh, yes, well, we have this. We have this many computers. And they may somehow tie that in to this to the company that you're working with there, and they can pick up this information because of what these people gave to their internet provider. Is it how old they are, how much money they make, you know. Like that. That may be a way that they get it. But other than that, I don't know how they could know. Yeah. No, probably not. Well, if they... Yeah. Yeah. So, how many percent are over 100,000? 40. You know, you ought to hit them up for some money. Yeah. Well, then you... What you need to do then is look around and figure out... Well, if it's true they got so many people with that much money, you've got to come up with the donate button on your homepage.
Speaking of your site, Bill, I'm sorry, but I wasn't listening when you said how to get to that thing you just put up there. Would you just mind just...
It's way at the top there? Above all the names?
I mean, it's here on this thing we're doing?
Just above Bill's name? It's right at the top. Are you seven?
You know,
are you seven of none?
I am, sir.
Now, you see where your name is, where it's blue light lighting up?
You know, I minus that whole thing down, and it's like missing.
You don't have it, huh? Can you go down to the... Do you
here
have
I am
the
talking, but there's nothing.
Okay, now do you have at the bottom of your window, do you have a Christogenia Community Conference down there, the tab?
No.
You don't have any tabs on the bottom of your TeamSpeak window?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Okay, now
the
TeamSpeak right side,
thing is absolutely missing.
He can...
Yeah, I'm looking at it. Well, it's the lower left hand. I don't have it.
Okay, now go to the bottom of your window where it says Christogenia Main Forum. X, do you see that?
There's no window. Trust me.
Nothing at all?
Let me see now. I know what I'll do. I'll minus down the page I've got up here, which is Christogenia.org. Nope. All I got is my...
I know what happened.
My
down
desktop
in the lower.
Page. I did.
Down in the lower.
Okay, now I have a TeamSpeak 3 client. Looks like a moon or something. Okay, I double-clicked on it, but it just sat there.
Hmm.
I did that too. That's on my desktop, yeah. That's the only thing I see that says TeamSpeak. Yes, you are correct, sir. But where the heck is it? Okay. That's what my son tells me to do. Okay, we got lock this computer, switch user, log off, change a password, start task manager. Okay. I'm there. I do, sir. There's a whole bunch of them there, yeah. Yeah, TS3 client.
Left single click and then right click?
On the right or the left?
No.
My right button or my left button? Okay, I did. Now, it's highlighted.
Oh, I see.
It's just, there's no switch to button on the bottom. It says show processes from all users and end process. No. I have, up in the top, I got file, options, view, and help. Same thing.
Usually when I have a, when I lose it, there's usually at the bottom, along with a little status bar, it says TeamSpeak 3. But sometimes when I when I click it and minimize it, it goes over to where the I have it on the right bottom, far bottom right. I have the time, and then there's this little blue circle. Okay.
Doing it. Tab. Okay. Yeah, it's, there's a box here and it's going crazy. Oh. Okay, I pressed tab. Okay, I've got a little window there. It says desktop. What does that look like? I swear. Well, that little up arrow? Yeah, sure. Oh, there's a little blue dot that was blinking. I didn't see that before, I swear. You mean left-click on it once? Or right-click on it? Okay. Show. Okay, I'm back. No, I right-clicked on it once. Then I got a little thing that said show, and I clicked on that, and we're back. I see all of you. Wonderful to be back.
How about that? Now he wants to copy that. Now you can...
Oh. Okay, okay. Session knows, yeah, there it is. Oh, I see. Oh, that was quick. Have you read this thing yourself? Okay. 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 All right, I'll read it, too.
On page 12 of this MK kid, Confessions of a Missionary Kid, in the note number 2, it says, quote, by the 1920s, 38 states prohibited whites from marrying blacks, mulattoes, Japanese, Chinese, Indians, Mongolians, Malays, or Filipinos. And it cites New York Times, number 26, 2007. California was the first state to permit race mixed race marriages in 1948. All the states followed until 1967. Over at Gerald Mosley's Dixie site, somewhere in there, he has a document where it lists all the states that had those laws, what the laws were, and when they were repealed. He has them all in there.
So where are they going with this thing anyway?
Which thing?
This confessions thing. Are they going the right way or the wrong way? Yeah. Right. Yeah, I guess so. All right.
So far it reads more like her own biography. Spent a lot of time in the Philippines.
Oh, no.
How does the blight get there?
In the wind, yeah.
Now, is this something common up there, or is that... or is it... Yeah. Be interesting to figure out who's, how this is coming around, you know. Is it like a natural occurrence, or is this somebody coming in there with a truck or an airplane and spraying the place? Gee whiz.
Are you talking about zucchini squash? Yeah, they can get big quick. Yeah, they get huge. Wow.
Hey, Bill, that's why the plum tomatoes? Why not beefsteak? Okay.
Are these that you're planting, is this heirloom where you can get the seeds for next year? Or? I mean, you don't want me to send you a box of mashed potatoes then for Christmas? I think sweet potatoes are really supposed to be better for us than the white potatoes. It's slower sweets, yeah.
Yeah, actually, mashed potatoes with cream cheese.
That's ridiculous. They must have fed you those things every day in prison, huh? Yeah, but don't you got to eat what they give you in there? All those good potatoes.
I'll be having smoked salmon this evening.
Probably.
He thinks you might be Chinese.
Maybe it's because you are, or you don't like them.
What else we got to look at?
Oops. I noticed when I clicked on my TeamSpeak, it no longer appears down along with Word and the internet connection. It's way over to the right. Yeah, way over to the lower right, near where I have my time. So I have to right-click on the little blue ball when I'm talking. It's usually dark. And then it says Show, and I click on Show, and there it comes up again. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think, why the other man you're talking about didn't care much even for Team TalkShoe, because you have to go through all the muddle just to be able to find something in the chat room that is relevant.
Does multitasking really work? I just couldn't do that. I'd get everything
wrong.
You do,
but you don't know it, you know. But with serious things, you can't really divide your thoughts. But if you know what you're Yeah.
Yes. Right. You couldn't have a radio on, nothing like that. Good. Good. The Geneva Bible. Go ahead. Yeah, okay. Well, I can, you know, like walk and chew gum at the same time, but that's about it. The Geneva Bible, what was that translated from? Okay, so, but do you think the Geneva people were a little more honest than the King James group? Okay. Yeah, right.
It was a sacrifice.
Nothing. Yeah, right. Yes, they do. No, they consider it an investment.
Yeah, rather than a sacrifice. Yeah.
Well, that's blatant lying. You know, and you've got, you know, hundreds of ways you can show that, because when you translated it, you must have seen that kind of thing going on all the time. Right. Because even, you know, a person like me could have translated that word correctly. Wow. Honestly. Okay. Okay. Yippee. Wow. I'll bet you Eli was multitasking during that little session. Yeah, see, he was reading one of the chat things. That's what he was doing. And he just kind of, you know. Yeah.
The only possible thing that I've seen coming close, when you get involved with religions, you start doing this sort of a comparative study things. And most of them are out there just to, people go, they commune with what they think is God, and they go home, and they spend their 1 hour in the church, and how many hours on television. But the one church that he had really wasn't a church, it was more of a movement. Early on, and most people condemn it as a cult, but it wasn't. It was the Christian Science Church. And they had, as it happened, a woman who wrote a book. She felt inspired. Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures was called by Mary Baker Eddy. And as soon as you mention, I get emails all the time that people think they're inspired. But, you know, the proof of the pudding kind of shows it. And this church, before it became a real church, it was just people reading the book, what they called a textbook, and they read it and understood how to pray. And how to get results. A true Christian church should be a healing church. Not just go there, throw money in the pot, listen to some guy tell you how bad you are, and you're conceived in sin, born of iniquity, you need to be saved, come to me, I'll save you. They don't need that.
We need a church that heals the sick and raises the dead. You know, cast out demons and cleanse the lepers. That's what we were told to do. We weren't told to sit there and, well, even among ourselves. Well, be. But this is, you're talking about a Christian, any part of Christianity that was actually doing something that the Christianity was supposed to do. In other words, to do what Joshua did. Heal the sick, raise the dead. Well, that's true. And this is what this particular religion was doing. And they were doing very well. I mean, they were having healings and mass numbers. This was back in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And then after this, Eddie died, the evil-minded people took over the church, and those that were out in the rest of the churches and the members, they didn't quite understand that these evil people existed, and they destroyed that Christian Science church. But if you get the textbook, Science and Health, you'll find out that there is a way. That's a book that teaches people how to pray and how to pray and get healing. Well, I could see that. Of course, this, what I was referring to here was at a time in the 1800s, early 1900s, there was no television, there was no radio, there was no real mass communication. Well, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know how they followed any kind of laws of that nature or not, you know, the strict biblical laws. I never looked into it from that view. But there was a time when they were doing healing work. And that's what, if Christianity is going to do what Jesus did or Joshua did, they're going to have to do what Joshua did. And not just go to church and go home. It's got to be, they have the demonstrable proof. It's got to be in the healing of the sick. Now, raising the dead, that's kind of stretching it, you know. Because you could raise the spiritually dead. Casting off demons, you know, like you're saying, getting rid of the Jewish mentality that seems to be pervasive in everybody. But the Christianity, if it's going to be properly practiced, they've got to heal the sick.
So, Ken, what was the difference in the kind of praying that they were doing in the book?
What was the difference?
It's
been so long since I've looked at it. Go ahead.
Unicur, maybe we should all turn to whatever that is called, Christian Science. Go back to the original Christian Science.
I suppose. I was a member of that church for a long time, but I haven't even opened the book for a long time. I was sort of just turning away.
Well, why did you leave it if it was doing all this good stuff?
Because they didn't practice what they were preaching. I did a study on it, and
you could have yourself.
What's that?
I mean, you could have yourself, right?
Could have what?
Practiced all the right stuff yourself.
Oh, sure. Well, everyone seems to be at some particular spiritual level of practicing it or even knowing it, you know. But I could have. I wanted to. I've just been not doing it. It's like I should finish a book I'm writing here, but I'm too busy putting stuff up on the Internet, things like that.
You're writing a book?
Self-discipline is part of...
What are you writing about?
It's a history book, and it's got a lot of biblical references to it. Yeah. Even Methodist and Baptist is called, huh? They are. Yeah, they are. They are.
Hell yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Speaking of prayer, when it talks about praying in Yeshua's name, is that legitimate or? Absolutely, yeah. Holy.
Well, but that implies that you have to go around and do all these other human things and obey all these other human activities. Well, like these laws, which sort of it's kind of a broad spectrum of laws, because the laws, some of these laws in the Old Testament are really the result of human experience, and it may be good to obey it. That's true. But I'm thinking what you're saying earlier, how we have to obey all these things, otherwise Yahweh will not hear us. But I think maybe. But, you know, a fervent prayer from a sinner can get through just as good as some guy who's so doggone righteous, maybe, but he may not be obeying all the food laws.
Is that another pipe dream?
Hey, you nailed it.
Well, I think still that
that people who really have this fervent desire, their prayers will be answered, and then they'll be guided. To suggest we have to do some human act in order to appease him, I don't think so. If we really ask, he'll answer it. Yeah. You know, one of the difficulties is, in every church, just every church, you know, is this way, is getting someone who will just neutrally tell us what that law is and why it is. But though they're out there pontificating, you know, and it's kind of difficult to know which person to go to because they all seem to have this great, at least my experience is, this great idea of domination. You know, you've got to believe it the way I believe it, or you're going to go to hell, or you get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except for the food laws, you got to study those. Yeah, they are. They're not a problem.
Okay, I have another question for you. So if someone's praying, they're praying to Yeshua and not to Yahweh?
So, Uniker, religion, what is their view on creation?
It has been so long. I got this book here.
You remember.
I'll have to figure it out here. It's been around for, well, it was around, but not for very long. Where was it? Oh. They have a chapter on creation. I'll just read the first sentence or something, if I can get to it. If I can find out where it is. Well, a lot of the biblical guys have only one, so it's kind of, you know. Yeah, well, you know, they get to wear fancy clothes, too, and earrings. You try it, see what happens. Well, we let them get away. Oh, D8. Yeah, I should really go back and just read this book and just, you know, do something because there was a great healing because of this. Yeah, well, they claim it. Can they prove it? I suppose, you know. But there, I think if this could be a Christianity, the way Yahshua practiced it, which I think is the Old Testament religion, which we call Christianity, but what did they call it in the Old Testament, you know? See, the idea of creation is not any kind of a material creation. It's all a spiritual creation. In fact, everything is spiritual, if you really think of it.
You're losing thoughts.
I guess we were just thought here. I don't know. I'd have to spend some more time at this. Oh, sure, but I don't know if this is a material creation with, you know, dirt.
To wit, dirt.
Well, they had to come from somewhere. The dirt had to come from somewhere. There were these...
spinning electrons.
There were these scientists that came up with all this stuff, and they decided to have a meeting with God because they'd come up with all kinds of cures, and they created this stuff and cloned animals and vegetables and everything. They realized that they had the power of creativity. So they held this meeting with God. Says, you know, God, you're really grateful that you came up with all this stuff and you gave us things a mind to think with, and we've created all these things, and we now can heal with our medicines, and we can create with our scientific abilities, you know, and we really don't need you anymore. And God says, is that right? Oh, yes. You know, we've learned how to create life just from a handful of soil. Is that right? Can you prove it? Well, sure, said scientist. And he reached down and grabbed a bunch of soil. Now, in this soil, we have enzymes and proteins and blah, 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 blah. And God says, wait a minute. Go create your own dirt. So where does this dirt that was supposed to be made of come from? It was made by our God in a spiritual manner. So everything we have here really we have what they call a mortal mind. We have a limited thinking. And our limit is like the spectrum is from ultraviolet to infrared. That's all we can see with our eyes and all the colors we can see with our eyes. We can't see these other radio frequencies that are out there. We're apparently not ready for that. We can only see with our eyes. We can only feel with our hands. We have these seven senses. But there's a lot of other senses that are out there. We just haven't got comprehended. But everything really, down to it, is the spiritual nature. And when you have healings with prayer, that is a spiritual influence about what we believe is the material. This complex dirt we call our body. That's kind of what it is. And this creation is a spiritual creation, not using dirt to create something and rocks and stuff like that. It was all like as if we were in a dream, we didn't, or that we're daydreaming, thinking about something that doesn't really exist in our reality. That's not made of dirt there. It's just an idea. Same thing here. The creation is an idea of our Creator.
Okay.
It gets along the ideas of the metaphysical, you know, where it's not physical, but it's somewhat physical. It's, wow, but where did this energy come from? It has to have an origin. See, yeah.
All power and authority emanates from
the spiritual origin, right? A spiritual origin. Yeah, as we know it. That's so we
right.
believe. So we believe. Sure. Well, this is our limit. This. But
that's
this is our limitation. We have to understand our limit. Like, what was he say? What did he say?
Oh, my little grandson broke his ankle and he's been in a cast all summer.
Yeah.
It's all physical.
Well, that's our limitation for right now. We're not ready to have a great spiritual power. It's like witchcraft in the Old Testament. I couldn't figure out what is wrong with witchcraft that they hated it so much. And then finally it dawned on me, it's not witchcraft is what they call it. It's not evil. It's rather it's the misuse of spiritual power. And when some people get this idea, they say, hey, I've got the ability of spiritual power, and I'm going to use it. Well, a lot of them misuse it. They use it for evil purposes, to manipulate people, to get people to do things that they ordinarily don't want to do, like a sort of like a mental manipulation type of thing. And they found out that when this happens, this is adverse to everybody. So they outlawed witchcraft, which is the evil use of spiritual powers, because most people are not at that level to where they understand that they themselves have spiritual power to be able to have power over demons, like Yahshua said, to have power over even the material body. And they haven't quite got there yet. And those that do get there, quite often they start using it against, like this women's movement has a lot of witches that they come out and admit they're witches and Wicca and stuff like that. And these people may use this spiritual power for their own personal benefit, and not for the, they don't have to be communists and do it for everybody, but they start using it to manipulate people. So they outlawed it because not everybody's at that level. But if everyone had spiritual power and they knew it, and they knew what to do with it, then there would be less evil in the world, because there would be less opportunity for it to show up. It would be like if being in a room where everyone was humming, like these, who was it that does that? Somebody in the East, they go home like that. But if one of them got out of key, you'd know it right away. And spiritually harmonious people will know when another person in their midst gets spiritually disharmonic. But because in this human world we're not taught how to understand our spiritual powers, most people walk around thinking, oh, well, it's just me and that's it, you know. When you get around some people, you just can't think around them. And this is because they have no control over their spiritual powers. And sometimes they're trying to disturb your thoughts by their spiritual powers. So that would be witchcraft, and that's what they don't like. So that's why they outlawed witchcraft in the Old Testament, which kind of puts a suppression on these progress of people learning how to use their spiritual powers. When they get it, they're frightened of it, and they go, oh, that must be witchcraft. It must be evil. But healing by prayer is part of using that spiritual power. And if Jesus can do it, we can do it. If Yahshua said, you know, these things you can do, and even greater things you can do, which means we can exceed even what Yahshua did. And I've been kind of a fool. Well, Well, some people get it anyway, and they don't have that particular obedience. Claims. Yeah, that's. I can't think of the name of the guy right now, but he's some.
Benny Hinn.
Benny Hinn, maybe that's it. But that's all set up. Yeah, that's all big stage act.
So you're saying Mary Baker Eddy was a healer?
Yes. And she trained people. I don't know. Why would you die? Your time is up, I guess. I don't know. Nobody's been able to understand why we die. But you know, Jesus or Yahshua said we have everlasting life. But if he says it to me, he didn't say it to you. He said it to you, he didn't say it to me. We each have everlasting life.
Well, if we lump everybody together that comes along and starts some kind of a church movement, then that would be it. You know, we'd always be the exact opposite. You know, your idea of the truth, maybe not their idea of the truth. You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Uniker, did your people preach the law?
They did, but not like it is in the with the food laws. They didn't preach that, which, you know, once you become aware of that, then you can see where there's some things that they had to fill in. They didn't preach it quite like, let's say, like Bill would preach it. But Bill doesn't preach healing by prayer either, of disease. So, you know, that doesn't make Bill a cult. Well, but these people didn't do any. These people didn't sit there and not eat pork and go all this other stuff about the food laws. They just ate whatever they ate because they said, well, they had, maybe they thought, figured they had that spiritual power over that material object that would otherwise do something bad to other people. But they didn't preach the food laws as rigorously as you do, and yet they healed the sick and raised some of the dead. Well, they must have. They got plenty of testimonies. They have it. They have it. See, you don't admit. Yeah, sure. They never had this problem in the early years. They only had it after these evil-minded people got in there and ruined the church and ruined the whole thing. They twisted things around. They have what they call a weekly Bible lesson. And Eddie said, the future of Christians, it is upon the Bible lesson that the future of Christian Science largely depends. And as long as she was in charge of it, they had a burgeoning healing practice. And after she died, these other people got in there. After these people got in there, after she died, they got in and they twisted it around. And I could see it. I studied this up. They twisted it around and watered it down to the point where they had no healing left anymore. Now, when they have children coming along, they can't get healing from practitioners that don't know how to heal. It's obvious they're going to have problems and get these lawsuits if children are going to die from it. Because they're not practicing what they were taught in the early days. They had watered it down to where they don't have anything. But when you're looking at this, these people had a healing practice, and you don't. You obey the laws of the dietary laws and things like that, but they didn't. Now, ideally, you take the principles of that, and you merge them with the obedience to the law, and then you really have something even greater than you and greater than them. Well, apparently, maybe they did. Maybe they did. But I don't remember anything about heavily talking about that don't eat pork and don't eat a lobster and that all the kind of detail stuff like that. I don't remember that. And who knows, maybe in the early years they did talk about that and they did it. But later on, in the 80s when I started looking at this, it was complete. They didn't have it. And I haven't read the textbook for a long time, so I'd have to go back refresh my memory. But I don't think they really pushed too much on the dietary laws, partly because that would be a...
I think you're multitasking, Bill.
And talking and arguing at the same time. You see the problem? Right. True.
Hey, I have another question for you, because actually when you answered before, there's a little bit of hailstorm that was going on outside the window. So when we pray, and Yeshua is our intercessor, we're praying through Yeshua to God the Father, right? God the Father.
So we should really bypass the name Yahshua or Jesus and go to what we call Yahweh, right? Well, the question was when,
because I don't know if it's in Matthew or which gospel, but where it talks about whatever you shall ask in my name, that my Father will grant.
But
I forget which gospel it's in. If it was in Matthew or which, but where Yeshua says that whatever you ask in my name, that my Father will surely give. Well, it's almost like you know he like Yeshua was saying that. No, of course not. Of course not. Of course, but as far as the direction of the prayer though. Well, no, it's just
So we should just go ahead and just pray straight to Yahweh then. So then there is no intercessor then. Pray straight to Yahweh. But an intercessor is like a middleman, right?
Well, mediator in this.
Yeah. Well, it just that it throws me off when it says intercessor, and usually the, and that Christ was the Spirit of God wrapped up in flesh, right? Okay. Yeah, which brings up another question I had. It was when Yeshua said that, you know, he taught us how to pray and he gave us the Lord's Prayer, that, yeah, but so the question is, and a Cadillac for that black girl with a big butt down the street. So, but in that same stanza, he's also saying that, you know, to avoid the vain tradition of the heathen.
Yeah, that's like the Catholics do. They have their rosary, and they have a particular set of prayers or words, like Hail Mary, full of grace, something like that.
Sure,
and
sure,
you go
sure.
to the next button, Hail Mary, full of grace, blah, blah. Next button, it's almost like hypnotic. And that's
definitely... Okay. So, the thing is that it's kind of a contradiction that he's talking about saying the Lord's Prayer, and that's something that should be done... you know, as the staple prayer, but at the same time, it's saying that we should avoid coming of the kingdom. I was kind of partial to that that shibun down the street. No, the shibun. That you were talking about earlier. with the Cadillac and the big butt.
Hey, I got her.
She boom.
That's funny. There's no doubt about it that most Christians do not know how to pray. And the only difference whether they're obeying the law or not, they don't know how to pray because they were not taught how to pray. Simple as that. You know, they just were not taught how to pray. Actually, my kind of view is that the only part of the Lord's Prayer that we really have to concern ourselves with is "Thy will be done."
Yeah, and actually, what?
Yeah, yeah.
And what was the scripture where it talks about that we should exhort one another with prayer and hymn and song, psalms? Huh. Ponsus, yeah, to the grand.
That wailing wall belongs to the Jews. Isn't that a Herod's temple? And so that's... Yeah, yeah. So it's not at all Solomon's temple, which was totally destroyed. And then, you know, because they keep thinking that that's it. I had... I don't even think they... there was... essentially, it was the Jewish temple.
Yeah.
I don't see where they need a temple to begin with. You look at, you can see what happened in the old days where they spent all that money building this glorious building with solid gold doors and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. And you look at David. It shouldn't mean.
Yeah.
And yet we want to have some place where the people can come and gather and do what some people are calling the appointed times, where they were told to come together for various feasts of this and feast of that, you know. And they have to have some place to go, so they build a building to house themselves in there and out of the sun and stuff like that.
Outside.
Yeah, small groups, yeah.
Or in the time of Christ, they were just outside, down on lakefronts and mountaintops.
But when before that, even before Yahshua was, born, in the Old Testament times, where did they meet?
Well, you had the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had their own Levitical priests.
Right. I thought it meant sin, meaning together, and Gog, meaning leader, so leading themselves. So they had some kind of a physical structure that they could sit in out of the inclement weather and things like that. Yeah, not a lot of ritual.
Yeah, the other thing that that you brought up earlier, as far as the body being the temple, and that that's where you hold the spirit of Yahweh within you, and you can really see that people that have the spirit in them and they follow God's laws, his foods and commandments, see that they have that spirit in them. Whereas you have all these secular people who have been sucked right out of them. They're whitewashed sepulchers. Yeah, that seed. It's like everyone has that seed for that spirit, but except the spirit is dumbed down in people.
Dumbed down by the pastors, you mean, like that? And education?
Dumbed down by just people turning their backs on Yahweh and following the ways of the world rather than the ways of God.
I think a lot of it could be that either individual choice to turn away, or they've been directed away by someone else and they don't know any better, like a child told to do something is wrong and doesn't know it's wrong. Either way, they're not going along with the plan.
Yeah, which brings up another thing is that when there's all this turmoil that's going on out in the world because of the Jews and everything else, and all these people turn to their Judeo-Christian churches trying to find an answer, and they might get some short-term relief, but in the end that they don't find anything, and because of that, then they really turn their backs away from God.
Yeah, they're turning away from the church, but it ends up, they're turning, kind of like me, in a state of rebellion. I just won't always completely read the textbook again. I won't always work at even explaining the spiritual powers, And these other people, they turn away from God, not so much because turning away from God, but turning away from the church. But it ends up being turning away from God because they don't do what they're supposed to do. They go out and get drunk.
Yeah.
Just as well. Yeah. And here we are. Well, at least the people that doubt are looking for answers. If they ask questions and are doubting, they're looking for answers, they're looking for explanations. But most of the churches do not want anybody questioning anything. It's just supposed to say that they didn't go along with the program. This is our dogma, this is our tenets, and you have to believe in the Trinity. And they're frightened of it. Yeah. Well, that's part of our challenge.
How dare you?
And that's the problem. It's a whole generation. And her. How about your mother? How about your mother? Is she same way? Somewhat, but not entirely. Now, did she arrive at that because of what she learned from you, or did she do that because of her?
Hi, guys. Matt here.
How are you, Matt?
A little tired. Long night. Good to see you guys all still on. Yeah, I came from the old Catholic school camp. Yeah, just like you, Bill, I knew, what was being taught was wrong. None of it made sense to me. Absolutely no sense. And my mother, I really don't even know. I wish I could say that, she would say, tell me for sure, if I ended up with somebody from another race, I wouldn't say for sure whether or not she would be that upset with me, but I think she actually would be. And that is actually probably the closest to CI that she's going to get in terms of her thoughts and feelings because she's such a liberal feminist. I mean, she's not a racist, but I mean, I was not raised with an understanding that it was okay to race mix. You just had to be nice to other people. Well, I think what has my mom caught in this vicious circle is that she is under the complete impression that progressivism is good, that this quote-unquote constant change, you know, is necessary and go with the flow and blah, blah, blah. You know, she's thoroughly convinced that that is the way that, you know, we are supposed to be developing. Well, you know, I'm the big conspiracy theorist of the family, and it's not like I would, you know, concoct some cockamamie story. You know, I just happen to investigate what is going on, ask questions, you know, study, read, and you know, every time I would bring these things to my mother, her answer is pretty much, you know, I need to. How does she explain that? She says something to the effect of, you know, conspiracy theorists like you are looking for reasons to create lies or excuses or, you know, I can't believe her logic.
Maybe because it's not logical. You know, they watch television. And they believe what they're told on television, with the hypnotic effect.
Oh yeah, my mom was a huge PBS, you know, public broadcasting system subscriber.
Yeah.
That and public radio.
Well, even Yashua said it. We'd have to separate from our families if we're going to know the truth. I don't know exactly what he said, but that's pretty much what it boiled down to. You just got to give up your family. Gets down to it.
Yeah, I don't talk to my mother much. Actually, my last correspondence with her was, as you know, I send out a lot of mass emailings, and you know, she usually doesn't respond to any of them. And she finally responded to one, and you know, my response back, I pretty much let her have it. I don't think it was rude, but, you know, I did a lot of scripture quoting to absolutely refute her ideas. And I don't even think she read them, you know. She's just like, you know, you're so delusional. I just, you know, I pray to God that you will see the truth. And my final answer to her was, you know, I don't know what God you're praying to. I don't want to know.
The problem he raises up is the honor your father and your mother commandment, you know, and how do you do that? Maybe what you have to do is just kind of do like most of us should, not that I do it, but is just don't talk to them about it. It's just, you know, when you have a family gathering or something like that, just, yeah, they can Thanksgiving coming up in here, you know. Don't say a thing about it. They're waiting for you to tell them about all this and all that and how you explain the truth of the matter. And they're just waiting for you so they can pounce on you. And you never say a stinking word about politics or anything. You don't even answer it. I'll give you an example. One time a friend of mine who was a Christian preacher, and he didn't understand two-seat line because I didn't understand it in those days. He was really these real Bible-thumping type guys, you know. And he's very political, very tax protester type and stuff like that, you know. And so he was really on our side type of thing, our mentality. And he and I get together and we would just be talking everywhere about politics and Clinton and this and that, you know, and Reagan. And so they had a Thanksgiving dinner, and his wife invited me down there. And I says, it dawned on me, on one condition, I said, no politics. We're not discussing politics. You just tell them that it's your decision and I agreed. even though I was the one promoting the idea. I said, you tell him that you told me that there's going to be no discussion of politics. You tell Lenny, that's her husband, you tell Lenny there's no discussion of politics at this Thanksgiving Day dinner. She thought that was wonderful. So I get down on Thanksgiving Day, and we're all sitting around there waiting for the stuff to be served up. And her brother starts in on politics. Now, he wasn't told not to discuss politics. It's just Lenny and me. We're not going to do it. And I'm looking at Lenny, and he sat there, and he can keep his mouth shut real tight when he wants to. And he did. He went like this, you know. And I sat there and says, you know, I'd like to answer that question. It's a political question. I enjoyed arguing about politics, but I cannot engage in this conversation because I promised Lenny's wife, I named her Lenny's wife, that at her request we were not going to discuss politics. And I'm just not going to answer that. And that put an end to it. And from that moment on, all day long, we didn't talk about any politics. So maybe when you get together with your family and the holidays and stuff like that, just don't talk about it. If they ask you, just say, well, I've decided not to talk about this in family gatherings. And it throws cold water on them right away. And then you can still have your family gatherings, and you can still honor your mother, and maybe your father if he's still alive. Mine are both gone, and I don't miss them, considering the whole picture. But nonetheless, I honored. I didn't insult them. I didn't tell them what I really thought of their stupid ways and the things they did. I just was real nice to the very end. So I gave up talking to politics with them. And it just was better for me. I cared less about them. It's for me that I didn't discuss politics at family gatherings. And that made it easier for me. Now, how about them? They don't want to know. They can't sit there and see the handwriting on the wall. Maybe it's because they're not supposed to be the handwriting on the wall. So I would suggest if you go to your family or talk with your mom, just talk nice, talk about family things, whatever's good, and just don't talk to her about everything you know she needs to know because she doesn't want to know it. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. But I don't, you know, I don't have that relationship with my mother or, you know, the rest of my family for that matter, in that, you know, we're that tightly knit where we, you know, have a lot of quote-unquote family get-togethers that really doesn't happen all that often. And, you know, when I discuss these things with my mom, it's actually been very few and far between because of, you know, I mean, I've been the quote unquote black sheep of the family since I quit high school 6 weeks before graduation and took off because I couldn't stand Catholic school. I couldn't stand the entire hypocrisy of what my life was at that time. I was facing my parents, you know, going through a divorce after 31 years of marriage. You know, my life had completely fallen apart. And by this time, you know, I was very aware of the issue with history, and the things being taught in school being lies. You know, I was very knowledgeable about the history of my country, and I started getting very involved politically, and, you know, really started delving deeper. And, you know, and I can actually credit my mother for helping me and promoting my reading habits and my desire for knowledge. But I think she obviously thought it was going to go in an entirely different direction, you know, and she's just absolutely built up a wall for, you know, I'd say over 20 years now, where, you know, she absolutely refuses to even listen to anything I have to say, really, because she's already of the mind that, well, we agree to disagree, and that's where that is. So I don't really have that many discussions with her, and I don't, you know, I don't call her stupid or anything. I do not disgrace or dishonor my mother in the least. But for me, the commandment of honor your father and your mother is not necessarily meaning keeping your mouth shut at family functions so that you don't start an argument, it to me is, you know, if you actually have to distance yourself from them in order for you to live your life properly the way Yahweh wants you to, you cannot honor and your father and your mother more than that.
Yeah, if just going to avoid conflict, yeah, that's what you do.
I see Bill's walking the dog, so we got to keep blabbing.
Oh, is he out there? I haven't even looked at that TeamSpeak down there. I put on, if you scroll back up, or I can put it in again, somewhere in there, I found two books on the Internet. I own one book. I found it years ago called How We Got Our Bible. One of our previous discussions was comparing the Geneva and the other Bibles, you know. And so I thought I'd put that in there. I'll put it in here. Oh, I can't. I'm busy with it. I can too. I'll toss it in there for those that missed it. I'll put it over here. Okay. It's two books. One is How We Got Our Bible, from written in 1912. Another one is How God Inspired the Bible. And I'll put the page number in here. Here it is right there. And they're not very long, but they're written way back before a lot of troubles came along and those modern stuff. I'll put it in here. Okay, there you go. It's How We Got Bible and, oops, and Bible. Okay. And those are on my website, the General Synod website, and you can download those. Those are PDFs. So you can, right there, okay. And I clicked it about ago, and it goes right there, and you'll see down at the bottom of the monitor, it'll say How We Got Our Bible, John Patterson Smythe, and How God Inspired the Bible. And those are one book I've read, How We Got the Bible. I've read that, and it's pretty interesting. It talks about the different translations with Tyndale, Coverdale, all these people, and how they, and the troubles they had with the Catholic Church. My God, they had to uproot themselves and go to England or go to Switzerland just to not be murdered. And it's amazing how we were so troubled by these people that are insisting on doing it their way as far as the belief system, you know. So those are, and I have just found the other one, the How God Inspired the Bible. I haven't read that yet, but it's probably a good read.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out for sure. Yeah. But yeah, to me, the, you know, dual seed line Christian identity for me, and the foundations for the understanding, comes from nothing less than common sense in my eyes, in taking every angle and approach. I mean, you have to approach the Bible from a very scholarly point of view. You must have a broad understanding. And you had to have that pretty much in you in the first place, and when you know you're searching for a truth, you know you don't get the truth from one source. I mean, that's even a fundamental that's taught at a very low level within the public school system when they're talking, you know, when you're writing a thesis, when you're writing a paper. You have to list at least so many sources. And the reason for that is for validity for what you're writing, to prove that what you are writing is the truth and you are proposing facts. You develop a hypothesis or a theory, depending on what kind of paper you're writing. And it's very scientific. It's very logical. You can't approach something as detailed and important as the Bible without taking that broad understanding of every aspect into play. You can't trust, you know, one person or one source or one organized religion, one church. You know, because it's all of man, and we all understand that man is fallible. So, you know, I've been on a quest, you know, for a long time and trying to figure out what I can call the truth as it, you know, as I understood it being spoke of in the Bible. But just by reading it for me, that I couldn't quite grasp it. But that's because I didn't have all the keys. I didn't have the understanding of, you know, wow, yeah, I guess I really should start reading other literature around that time period. I need to, you know, I need to broaden my horizons with language, culture, and the history surrounding the areas and whatnot. And, you know, it has eventually then brought me to dual seed line Christianity, because it's the only one that approaches this all important piece of literature in this manner.
Seems every time. Go ahead. What's that? Well, maybe it's got back. It seems that everybody that gets somewhere ends up having to throw out a lot of things, and yet they've studied so many other things that they finally got rid of, thinking it didn't do any good, and then it all falls into place when you find that right, the combination to the lock, you know. But it's getting there that's sometimes frustrating.
I remember getting... sorry, Bill. I remember getting to, you know, the letters of Paul, and sometimes just end up being so frustrated. I'd have three different Bibles in front of me, and none of them would give me a proper rendition. I knew there was something screwed up with the translations because they were making absolutely no sense. I would get so pissed, you know. I would, you know, I felt like whipping the Bible across the room. That's awesome, Bill.
And you're going to have to be able to look around and find someone who is reliable and has the time to do some of the smaller, menial administrative work that you've been doing so that you can continue to expand on your knowledge, because if this website gets as popular as it is, you'll be too busy administrating it. You won't be able to continue your advanced studies. Well, there might be. If you taught them on some of the smaller stuff, if you prepared something and then you sent him an email, go to this folder, whatever, upload this stuff in, they already know what to do. Like right now, as I'm talking here, I'm working on some of those music video audio files that I'm putting up on the Gentle Cynic site while I'm doing here. It's pretty easy to do. If I can do it, others can do it. But the general idea is to find someone who can be your trusty assistant. Well, that's true.
Well, Bill, you write lines.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you get to that point where you have so much going on, someone may come along that has that kind of knowledge or can be trained to do something in that regard. Anything that'll lighten up the load, because you can't do it all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that quiet time. And that's based mostly on memory, which came from previous reading. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mhm. 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 Yeah. 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 Well, the answer will come along here. It's kind of like prayer. We were talking earlier about prayers, you know, and the problem with some prayers is that when your prayers are answered, it's hard to believe. It's so simple that you have some problem or you have some crisis, you know, and all of a sudden something happens, somebody decides not to do something or something changes, and all of a sudden you don't have a problem anymore. And you think, well, so-and-so went over there, he just didn't want to do this anymore, or he helped us, or he came in, or something like that. Some human activity came along and relieved you of this problem, but you prayed to be relieved of the problem, and when the problem is relieved, you think, oh, well, it's just coincidence. The guy walked in and helped me, or the guy decided to call me up and cancel his order, or whatever like that, or he did something else and made it better for me. We tend to throw the prayer out and say, well, it worked out this way. No, it was really God's hand moving this whole thing around so that you could have what he feels is right for you. So
you'll just have to ask for some help in resolving the time problem, and it'll come along. That's the hardest part, is to recognize that this is an answered prayer. What am I bitching about? Why am I denying this? You know, this is an answered prayer. That's the hardest part about prayer, is accepting the fact that it happened. Because a lot of prayer is just too coincidental. We have to forget that.
I'll tell you what, I fully believe in the power of prayer. There is no question about that. I think Yahweh saved my butt today. I saw my PO, you know, concerning my little incident, and he basically informed me that he could take me to jail. I should be in jail right now for 30 days.
Yeah, it doesn't do to argue with him if he has that kind of power. Just have to say yes, sir, no, sir, and no excuse, sir. Just like the army. So what happened?
Well, as you can see, I'm not in jail.
Yay.
And I don't think I
Yay.
Will be going.
Now, you made an effort to seek help with that through prayer?
Oh, absolutely. Because I knew it was on my plate.
Yeah, but what? What upstairs? A sleeper?
Well, and also what I was really concerned about also was, you know, I only had 2 months left on my probation. And, you know, I didn't want it extended. You know, there was just so much more headache, hassle, you know, and whipping that I could have taken over this. And, I mean, I'm looking at probably losing my license for another year and, you know, at least another $1,200 in fines. But at least, you know, I'm not going to be legally in chains and beholden every month and having to pay babysitting fees and, you know, all this other crap, you know, because I don't, you know, I'm definitely going to be moving here sometime soon and you know, I don't need to be under their watchful eye.
Well, I think you'll always be out there now under their watchful eye, but not quite as close.
Well, I've been on their radar for quite a long time, but you know, I'm talking about, you know, there's a difference between being under their radar and being under their thumb. I'd rather be under their radar.
Yeah, yeah. Now, when you had this meeting with him, and he pretty much told you that he could, but he won't. Is that what he said? Kind of, he could put you in jail, but he won't.
Oh, that was exactly it. Yeah. Because I've been a you know, I've been a model criminal, you know, no problems for me at all. You know, paid everything on time, got everything done. You know, I show up with a smile. You know, every time I see him, it only lasts like 3 minutes. You know, mm-hmm. He knows. You know, he stops by the house. Every time he stopped by the house, you know, we've been, you know, homeschooling our children or you know, involved in something, you know, playing games with the kids, you know, so he knows he's got nothing to worry about. And that obviously came into play in his decision, because his ultimate decision was, look, you know, I can hold this off. He's like, you got 2 months left, you know, as long as you have everything paid up by this date, which was October 26th. That's the end of my probation. He's like, you know, you'll be off probation, and then this isn't going to affect you, and you're not going to be facing jail time or any extra repercussions. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure at this point, if I could actually pay off the remaining $600-some-odd that I owe, he would just let me write off probation anyway.
So you're really a model probationer, not a model criminal.
Oh, no. This is a result of a DUI. I just sent my 18-year-old off to college, and he was kind of my chauffeur. And I got pulled off the highway, probably from either being caught by camera or some kind of scanning device that they have in their vehicles, scanned my license plate, saw it was registered to somebody with a suspended driver's license and pulled me over. I was on my way to go help a fellow kinsman who's severely disabled with some pretty much emergency repairs on his house. So I got busted for driving on a suspended license, and that was a violation of probation.
Mm. When he decided not to give you a good whack in jail, how did you express your gratitude to him?
Well, I thanked him greatly, shook his hand, and told him he saved my ass. But I knew what I was facing. I knew they could have hit me with the book. And I prayed hard, and there's no doubt that Yahweh. And I'm not the only one who prayed. There's quite a few in CI who are aware of my situation. And, they've all told me that they prayed for me, too, and there's no question that he interceded.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Sounds like I had a good show.
Okay.